The Waiting by Jorge Luis Borges. The cab left him at number 4004 on that street in the northwest part of Buenos Aires. It was not yet 9 in the morning. The man noted with approval the spotted plane trees, the square plot of earth at the foot of each, the respectable houses with their little balconies, the pharmacy alongside, the dull lozenges of the paint and hardware store. A long, windowless hospital wall backed the sidewalk on the other side of the street. The sun reverberated farther down from some greenhouses. The man thought that these things, now arbitrary and accidental and in no special order like the things one sees in dreams, would in time, if God willed, become invariable, necessary and familiar. In the pharmacy window, porcelain letters spelled out the name Breslauer. The Jews were displacing the Italians, who had displaced the Creoles. It was better that way. The man preferred not to mingle with people of that kind. The cabman helped him take down his trunk. A woman with a distracted or tired air finally opened the door. From his seat, the cabman returned one of the coins to him, a Uruguayan 20 centavo piece, which had been in his pocket since that night in the hotel at Melo. The man gave him 40 centavos and immediately felt, I must act so that everyone will forgive me. I have made 2 errors. I have used a foreign coin, and I have shown that the mistake matters to me. Led by the woman, he crossed the entrance hall and the first patio. The room they had reserved for him opened happily onto the second patio. The bed was of iron, deformed by the craftsman into fantastic curves representing branches and tendrils. There was also a tall pine wardrobe, a bedside table, a shelf with books at floor level, 2 odd chairs, and a washstand with its basin, jar, soap dish, and bottle of turbid glass. A map of the province of Buenos Aires and a crucifix adorned the walls. The wallpaper was crimson, with a pattern of huge spread-tailed peacocks. The only door opened onto the patio. It was necessary to change the placement of the chairs in order to get the trunk in. The roomer approved of everything. When the woman asked him his name, he said Villari. Not as a secret challenge, not to mitigate the humiliation which actually he did not feel, but because that name troubled him, because it was impossible for him to think of any other. Certainly he was not seduced by the literary error of thinking that assumption of the enemy's name might be an astute manoeuvre. Mr. Villari at first did not leave the house. After a few weeks, he took to going out for a while at sundown. One night, he went into the movie theatre 3 blocks away. He never went beyond the last row of seats. He always got up a little before the end of the feature. He would see tragic stories of the underworld. These stories, no doubt, contained errors. These stories, no doubt, contained images which were also those of his former life. Villari took no notice of them because the idea of a coincidence between art and reality was alien to him. He would submissively try to like things. He wanted to anticipate the intention with which they were shown. Unlike people who read novels, he never saw himself as a character in a work of art. No letters, not even a circular, ever arrived for him, but with vague hope he would always read one of the sections of the newspaper. In the afternoons he would put one of the chairs by the door and gravely make and drink his mate. his eyes fixed on the vine covering the wall of the several-story building next door. Years of solitude had taught him that, in one's memory, all days tend to be the same. But that there is not a day, not even in jail or in hospital, which does not bring surprises, which is not a translucent network of minimal surprises. In other confinement, he had given in to the temptation of counting the days and the hours, but this confinement was different, for it had no end, unless one morning the newspaper brought news of Alejandro Villari's death. It was also possible that Villari had already died, and in that case, this life was a dream. This possibility disturbed him because he could never quite understand whether it seemed a relief or a misfortune. He told himself it was absurd and discounted it. In distant days, less distant because of the passage of time than because two or three irrevocable acts, he had desired many things with an unscrupulous passion. This powerful will, which had moved the hatred of men and the love of some women, no longer wanted any particular thing. It only wanted to endure, not to come to an end. The taste of the mate, the taste of black tobacco, the growing line of shadows gradually covering the patio, these were sufficient incentives. In the house, there was a wolf dog, now old. Villari made friends with him. He spoke to him in Spanish, in Italian, in the few words he still retained of the rustic dialect of his childhood. Villari tried to live in a simple present, with no memories or anticipation. The former mattered less to him than the latter. In an obscure way, he thought he could see that the past is the stuff time is made of. For that reason, time immediately turns into the past. His weariness one day was like a feeling of contentment. In moments like this, he was not much more complex than the dog. One night, he was left astonished and trembling by an intimate discharge of pain in the back of his mouth. This horrible miracle recurred in a few minutes and again towards dawn. Villari the next day sent for a cab, which left him at a dentist's office in the wants section. There he had the tooth pulled. In this ordeal, he was neither more cowardly nor more tranquil than other people. Another night, returning from the movies, he felt that he was being pushed. With anger, with indignation, with secret relief, he faced the insolent person. He spat out a coarse insult. The other man, astonished, stammered, caught an excuse. He was tall, young, with dark hair, accompanied by a German-looking woman that night. Villari repeated to himself that he did not know them. Nevertheless, 4 or 5 days went by before he went out into the street. Amongst the books on the shelf, there was a copy of the Divine Comedy, with the old commentary by Andreoli. Prompted less by curiosity than by a feeling of duty, Villari undertook the reading of this capital work. Before dinner, he would read a canto, and then, in rigorous order, the notes. He did not judge the punishments of hell to be unbelievable or excessive, and did not think Dante would have condemned him to the last circle, where Ugolini's teeth endlessly gnaw Ruggieri's neck. The peacocks on the crimson wallpaper seemed destined to be food for tenacious nightmares, but Mr. Villari never dreamed of a monstrous arb and inextricably woven of living birds. At dawn he would dream a dream whose substance was the same, with varying circumstances. Two men and Villari would enter the room with revolvers, or they would attack him as he left the movie house, or all three of them at once would be the stranger who had pushed him. or they would sadly wait for him in the patio and seem not to recognize him. At the end of the dream, he would take his revolver from the drawer of the bedside table, and it was true he kept a revolver in that drawer, and opened fire on the men. The noise of the weapons would waken him. But it was always a dream, and in another dream the attack would be repeated, and in another he would have to kill them again. One murky morning in the month of July, the presence of strange people, not the noise of the door when they opened it, woke him. Tall in the shadows of the room, curiously simplified by those shadows in the fearful dreams, they had always been clearer. Vigilant, motionless, and patient, their eyes lowered as if weighted down by the heaviness of their weapons. Alejandro Villari and a stranger had overtaken him at last. With a gesture, he asked them to wait and turned his face to the wall as if to resume his sleep. Did he do it to arouse the pity of those who killed him? Or because it is less difficult to endure a frightful happening than to imagine it and endlessly await it? Or, and this is perhaps more likely, so that the murderers would be a dream, as they already had been so many times in the same place at the same hour. He was in this act of magic when the blast obliterated him.